From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's Tuesday, the 28th day of April, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. We'll get updates from the state statisticians in Illinois, Iowa, and Minnesota on crop progress and conditions in their areas. We'll take a look at the weather forecast with Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. And we'll hear an excerpt of the web with Joe Glauber from IFPRI, the International Food Policy Research Institute out of Washington, D.C., that I hosted this morning. And it all happens right here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here the way the number settled in Chicago for the day. May corn down 2 3/4 at 302 3/4. July at 312, a penny and a quarter lower. In December at 330, up a half cent. May beans 3 lower at 826. July at 832, 4 1/2 lower. November down a penny and a quarter, and it finished at 839. The bean oil at 2530, up 31. Bean meal down 350 at 281.80. And July wheat futures soft red at 526, up 1 1/4. Live cattle futures finished at 85.52 1/2, and the April up 72 1/2 cents. The May feeders up 35 cents at 118.50, and lean hogs in the May contract at $55.05, down $1.22 1/2 for the day. As we went into the close, there was one big news item. President Donald Trump plans to use the Defense Production Act, reports Reuters, to mandate that meat processing plants owned by Tyson Foods and others remain open. This to protect the U.S. food supply during the coronavirus outbreak. That according to a senior administration official and Reuters. The official said Trump was expected to sign an executive order later on Tuesday with provisions to protect and provide additional liabilities to the companies. We're now joined by Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, to talk about this and so much more. Let's start with that. That's probably welcome news in the agricultural world, I would think, Wayne.
I would think it'd be just tremendous out there. You know, we were looking at the idea that we were going to have to euthanize. They've been euthanizing some chickens, some sows that they have induced to abort, everything like that. And every time we do something like that, you know, we already have a crisis as far as our corn usage number because of ethanol going away. And this, you know, was taking away feed usage of corn, too. And when you took, you know, ethanol and feed, that was 70, when you put those two together, it was 70-some percent of our corn usage for this country. So, you know, this to save at least the feed usage is going to be a big deal. Plus, also, I don't know if you've been watching the news lately, but, I mean, every news channel last night on the evening news run about possibly of meat shortages in the grocery store. And this is something that's just not good to have scare tactics like that used.
Yeah, that could cause a run, which would be a problem. So it looks like those suppliers are going to stay open, and the president's going to ask that be the case. So supply chain should stay intact. Speaking of intact, May corn went down to within a quarter of a cent of its 301 low. That's contract low, and gosh, that $3 level is psychologically important as well. It finished at 302 3/4. I guess that's better than 301, I would think.
Well, it sure is, Todd. You know, if we can hold this point and bounce off, and we also got maybe the little, you know, I don't know that it was in the corn market really that way, but if we can get the idea that our feed usage isn't going to go away or cut back, and knowing that we're going to feed a little more corn because we don't have the DDGs, it's going to be a little bit supportive. Now, remember, tomorrow's the last day to get out of the May corn without the possibility of being delivered on Thursday morning. Basically, we might see a little more liquidation out of the May tomorrow, but then we're going to really be looking at the July instead. But your front month, we just don't want to take that $3 mark out right now.
Did you take a look at yesterday's crop progress report? Numbers looked good.
Yes. I mean, we were flying around, you know, the corn at 27%, up from 7%, 20%. And they actually made the comment on about 4 or 5 of the news wires today that they probably didn't even get all the progress that was made in Illinois and Iowa, and they expect Iowa that they were behind and that they actually got more planted than that. And we're seeing a lot of corn and beans both go in the ground over here in Indiana, so much better than last year, better than the 5-year average. And, you know, this crop is getting in the ground, and that, you know, means I got a lot better chance of getting a crop this year. that way. You know, we can hope for a little bit of dry weather in Russia and Ukraine and South America here to cut their crop back a little bit, but it looks like they're going to get some rains next week.
Yeah, the state of Minnesota, you'll hear this momentarily on the air here, at 40% planted for corn. That is just honking on for them. So a lot of corn in the ground, a lot of soybeans in the ground as well. Any final word from you before I let you go for the day?
Well, I think, you know, like I say, we want to keep a close eye on this, but really glad to see the president taking steps to keep the livestock industry, you know, moving along instead of just destroying good animals.
And the supply chain should remain intact. Thank you so much, Wayne.
Thank you, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows as of Sunday, 27% of the U.S. corn crop had been sown. 8% of the soybeans were in the ground. Both of those were well ahead of average. Spring wheat planting at 14% seeded, half of the average amount, and the winter wheat rating declined some 3 points to 54%, good to excellent. Now, here are updates from the state statisticians in Minnesota, Illinois, and Iowa.
This is Melissa Couch, agricultural statistician for the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service. Although most of Iowa received spotty rains, there were 5.3 days suitable for field work during the week ending April 26, 2020. In contrast, it was mid-June before Iowa farmers had a week with 5.3 days suitable for field work in 2019. Top moisture levels rated 1% very short, 5% short, 85% adequate, and 9% surplus. Iowa farmers planted over one-third of the expected corn crop during the week ending April 26th for a total of 39% planted. Soybeans planting got underway with 9% of the expected crop planted, 10 days ahead of last year and 1 week ahead of the average. Only 20% of Iowa's expected oat crop remains to be planted, with just 22% of the oat crop emerged. Pasture condition rated 1% very poor, 7% poor, 28% fair, 54% good, and 10% excellent. Cattle have been moved onto pastures in some areas. Warmer and drier conditions improved livestock conditions. For the USDA NAS Upper Midwest Regional Field Office, this is Melissa Couch.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois, with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Last week began with excellent fieldwork conditions, and farmers made progress planting corn and soybeans, as well as doing other fieldwork. Late in the week, nearly all locations received significant rainfall, and fieldwork was halted. There was an average of 4.3 days suitable for fieldwork around the state last week. Topsoil moisture supplies were rated 1% short, 79% adequate, and 20% surplus. Average rainfall around Illinois last week was 1.75 inches, and that was nearly 1 inch above normal. Temperatures averaged 52 degrees and ranged from 3 to 5 degrees below normal for this time of year. Soil temperatures on Sunday ranged from the mid-40s in northern Illinois to the lower 50s in southern parts of the state. Corn planting progressed by 29 points and is now 37% finished. That compares to 7% 1 year ago and 31% for the 5-year average. 1% of corn acres have emerged. Soybean planting is 18% finished compared to 2% 1 year ago and 4% normally. The winter wheat crop is 6% headed compared to 3% 1 year ago and 13% normally. The condition of the winter wheat crop was reported as 4% very poor, 7% poor, 26% fair, 49% good, and 14% excellent. That is a little worse than last week, but better than 1 year ago. Pasture conditions were rated 5% very poor to poor, 28% fair, and 67% good to excellent. That is also worse than last week, but better than 1 year ago. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Dan Loftus, state statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, with weekly crop progress and condition report for the week ending April 26, 2020. Dry, mild weather conditions allowed for rapid planting progress of corn, oats, and sugar beets. There were 4.9 days suitable for fieldwork statewide during the week, and activities included tilling, fertilizer application, and row crop and small grain planting. Topsoil moisture supplies are rated 0% very short, 8% short, 76% adequate, and 16% surplus. Corn planting was in full swing at 40% complete. That's 20 days ahead of last year and 9 days ahead of the 5-year average. Soybean planting has begun and was 5% complete. That's 17 days ahead of last year and 4 days ahead of average. Spring wheat planting was 6% complete, 1 week ahead of last year, but 15 days behind average. One third of the oat crop was planted, leading to 43% of the total planting progress complete. Barley was 11% planted compared to the average of 21%. Potatoes were 17% planted, 1 week ahead of last year, but 3 days behind average. Sugar beets were 29% planted. That's 12 days ahead of last year, but 1 week behind average. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress across the Midwest. On this Tuesday, let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. We're joined by Don Day. He's a day weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me about the weather forecast across the growing regions of the United States. Maybe start with some of those hard red winter wheat areas that suffered a pretty good frost freeze a couple of weeks back.
Well, yeah, I tell you, April has been a really cold month when you look at average compared to normal for the month so far. Now, what we're likely going to see over the course of the next week or two is the country's going to be divided a little bit in half, with the warmest part of the United States being in the central and the west, coldest in the east, and that kind of puts the Corn Belt right in between both of those areas, as well as those hard winter wheat areas. Although the hard winter wheat is likely going to see it, especially here in the short term, a whole lot warmer. In fact, we're looking at temperatures that are going to be going into the 80s and 90s before the week's over across portions of eastern Colorado, western Kansas, Oklahoma, parts of Texas. Even some mid to upper 80s going to get as far north as parts of Nebraska and South Dakota.
And in the Midwest, maybe start in the northwest with the Dakotas, where you ended up, and then work your way towards Ohio.
Well, what we're likely going to see here is a typical late April, early May pattern, which means some ups and downs in temperatures still, but not as extreme as the ups and downs that we had here over the last couple of weeks. We see frequent opportunities that there's going to be some precipitation moving on through. Those northwest Corn Belt areas, we do expect that it is going to be wet across the eastern Dakotas, Minnesota, Iowa, eastern Nebraska, and central and northern Missouri, central and northern Illinois. Over the next 10 to 15 days, ample opportunities for some shower and thunderstorm activity. Now, it doesn't look like any excessive precipitation. I would say it skews to what we'd expect average precipitation to be late April and early May, which is usually pretty wet. We are entering the time of year where rain is more frequent and quite widespread. So we expect that, but we also don't expect it to be too heavy.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. This morning, I hosted another of the Farm Doc Daily Live Coronavirus and Ag webinars. This one focused on agricultural trade and China in particular. Our special presenter today was Joe Glauber with IFPRI from the International Food Policy Research Institute out of Washington, D.C. He spent the last 5 years, the previous 30 years in the office of the chief economist at USDA. We started by asking Mr. Glauber in the question and answer session about ethanol and the potential for it to be exported to China.
I certainly think there's expectations, or there certainly were expectations that China would purchase ethanol. I think the couple things that I would note is that China had been on has a renewable fuel program, but I think this was back in December or maybe early January, talked about, or there was an announcement out of China is that they were going to relax the blending constraint, which made me think at the time, well, gee, does this mean they don't need to import as much ethanol as we might have hoped? But I think bigger problems now are the fact that you just have, I mean, the U.S. isn't the only country where people are driving a lot less, and that the fact that oil prices are down as low as they are, you know, hopefully this we'll see these markets start to rebound as the recovery comes in. But, you know, whether or not we see much ethanol being purchased this year, we might see some symbolically, you know, China making some purchases for that. But it, I think the, you know, whether or not it is over time, I think that's a different story. We could see some markets develop. And I think that's the hopeful thing about this agreement is that, that we will see, you know, once all this COVID disruptions are over with, that we'll see more trade start flowing.
I'll follow that up with some more ethanol, but trade issues and both domestically or on the international front, then supply management as well. How fast can ethanol production come back in the United States? I think that's also related to the RFS and 2022. And then how do you go through this big pile of corn that's building up? And that comes to a supply management question that people are asking.
Yeah, I think insofar as ethanol production is concerned, I think that really is going to be dependent on domestic, that is U.S. Motor vehicle use. And I think it would be hard to start driving that off of foreign markets that again, I think there's just the similar economics that we see here are also going on in foreign markets as well. How fast they can come on, I think that's the there are probably people that have far more expertise in answering that question, but I would imagine that you know, if we start anticipating demand coming back on the more motor vehicle use and start seeing, you know, projected gasoline consumption back in the 130 billion gallon range, that we'd start, you know, and above, where that we'd start with those things would come on as quickly as they could. The corn's there, obviously, and that is a bigger issue right now, right? It's just that we have bins full of corn, and, you know, farmers trying to make planning decisions where, you know, and certainly what the intentions report suggested, you know, 97 million acres, you know, certainly the soybean corn ratio has changed a lot since then. It's now up to 5 or higher, pointing to more beans. We'll see. I think supply management is a mistake, because I think that only gives markets to other countries. But I do think that also means that in some areas of the country, they may not be growing as much, putting in as many acres of beans and corn as they might have otherwise. I mean, you talk Illinois, you know, these are, you know, this part of the Midwest is, you know, where our comparative advantage is. I mean, we're low-cost producers worldwide. You know, I don't expect much drop-off there, but I think in some of the other areas where we've seen expansion of being in corn area, you know, if you have continued low prices, I think you will see some changes there. The problem is there's no great alternative, right? I mean, this isn't like you're going to turn to some niche crop or even traditional crops in some of those areas like wheat. I don't see it, but you know, I think we're any hopes to pull out of the kind of the levels of stocks and other sorts of things that we've seen, short of a major drought somewhere, I think we're going to be looking at big stocks coming out of this crop year.
Do you anticipate any long-term impacts of U.S. support for managed trade with China?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, and I think that's the thing that bothers me most about this agreement. What the agreement says is that, you know, after 2021, we expect over the next 4 years or 3 years afterwards that trade will continue on that trend. But the problem I have is that because you're not doing anything structural, you're not reducing tariffs. I mean, if you had said, okay, we're going to take soybean tariffs down to zero, well, that gives us an advantage against Brazil. And that would be certainly something where, I mean, tariffs are low already. I mean, they're at 3% without the additional tariffs. But, you know, if you were to talk about reducing corn tariffs down to zero, the over quota tariffs on corn or wheat, then I think, you know, okay, those are things that where you can really see where China would really start to import. In my view, what you want are the commercials doing the making those decisions, right? I mean, you want private companies to say, we're going to bring this in. You don't want COFCO to be the one who's making sure that the trade agreement holds, because I think, unfortunately, when it gets down to that, then you're really talking about an agreement that can be broken as soon as the government says, well, yeah, that was then, we're going to look at something different. If you think about, you know, some of you out there are probably old enough to remember long-term grain agreements that the U.S. had with Russia or the former Soviet Union and even China. I mean, those were, they look great on paper, but they always fell apart. And they fell apart within, you know, a couple of years of them making these long-term arrangements, that things happened and people just said, oh, well, we can't do that. You know, sometimes that was bonehead moves on our part, embargoes and things like that. But you know, it's just to say, I would much rather see substantive reforms on trade barriers and lower those. Then you'll have trade. And I think that's been the experience. So sorry, I'm going way too long. Yeah. Let's take your next one.
So one final question then, and it's related to what you just discussed. What is the political calculus in Washington, D.C. as it relates to coronavirus in China and trade going forward? Meaning, what will...
Hard to say. I mean, getting back to an earlier point I made, you know, we kind of shift our focus from one big crisis to the next crisis without much thought in mind. You know, it's almost like phase one. What was in phase one? I got to remember. I think everyone hopes that there will, certainly on the ag side, we hope that there will be a normalization. I'd be perfectly happy to see us back to, you know, pumping out 20, like the volumes that we were seeing in 2017 with growth because of you know, increased demand for protein and other things in China. But what's just so hard to see is how, you know, is this COVID-19 a temporary phenomena? In which case, you know, do we see the recovery and then everyone kind of remembers it like, oh, gee, that was a bad year? Or is this some new normal? And I hope it's not that. But, you know, there's still just so much uncertainty there.
That was the former chief economist for the United States Department of Agriculture and current senior fellow at the International Food Policy Research Institute, Joe Glauber. His comments were made during the FarmDoc Daily Live webinar series. You can find it online at our website, WILLAG.org.